Now that the Senate has failed to agree on a plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, what should happen now? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We will talk with two guests who have different ideas, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. President Trump is scheduled to host the Senate GOP Conference Committee for lunch at the White House today. And despite not having the votes for passage, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced last night on the Senate floor that Republicans would hold a procedural vote on a bill that would repeal and replace Obamacare 2 years from now. So what do we make of all of this? And again, what do you think should happen now? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let me welcome our first guest. Diana Furchgott-Roth is the director of Economics 21 at the Manhattan Institute and a Manhattan Institute senior fellow. Good morning, and thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
It's good to have you back. So what is your reaction to Senate Republicans and their inability to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act?
Well, it's extremely disappointing. Here, Republicans have been running on this issue ever since Obamacare was voted into law in 2010. And now, finally, there's a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican president who is willing to sign a repeal bill, and yet there's no repeal. It's extremely disappointing, especially for those of us who see family members on Obamacare and their premiums are rising every year. The system itself is unsustainable.
President Trump says it is time to let Obamacare fail, and he said that he is not going to own it. Republicans are not going to own it. So do you agree?
Well, the system is certainly going to fail because premiums are rising higher and higher and people aren't going to be able to afford them. And also insurance companies are dropping out of the system. So people have less choice of companies. And since Republicans are the party in power, there really isn't any choice but that Republicans own it.
Yeah, but how bad do you think it's going to be if we do nothing and let Obamacare run its course?
Well, first of all, if something gets to such a point that it fails, then there's going to be a replacement. So something is going to happen to have to replace it. So that's just how the system works. Yeah. I mean, something fails, and then other things come up to replace it. But it'd be nice if Congress were to take charge.
Yeah. Do you fear or do you think we should go back to a time when, you know, we're not covering people with pre-existing conditions, we're not covering a lot of essential health care services, we're letting people, you know, have bare-bones policies and that sort of thing? Is that what you think we should allow happen?
People should definitely be allowed to have the policies that they want to buy just with auto insurance. You can have a policy with a high deductible or home insurance. You should be able to have a policy that covers you getting cancer or falling off your bike in traffic, but not covering routine care such as well baby visits or predictable annual checkups. That would be like having your insurance company pay for your oil, having your auto insurance company pay for your oil. You don't do that because that's a predictable expense. You have your auto insurance for major accidents. We should be able to purchase health insurance for major life events. And that's what Senator Cruz's amendment would have done. It would have allowed insurance companies to offer the kinds of plans people wanted to buy as long as they offered one Obamacare-compliant plan.
Mm-hmm. So here is what Kentucky Senator Rand Paul had to say after it was apparent that a straight-up repeal vote in the Senate did not have the support to pass. Let's take a listen.
The death spiral of Obamacare is regulations make insurance expensive, and then you say, oh, but you can get it after you're sick. That is the real problem. That's the whole problem we have. It's the adverse selection and the death spiral. That's what we need to fix. We don't have enough votes to repeal all of that. So we're going to have to move forward, and I'm in favor of moving forward with partial repeal and continuing to work on trying to get rid of the rest of the bad elements of that Obamacare that have driven prices up.
So let's talk about that first part of what he said there, the death spiral of Obamacare, that regulations drive up the cost of insurance and that people can buy it once they are sick. So is that why Obamacare is in a death spiral?
Well, there's a problem that if you say you're going to cover people with pre-existing conditions or people with any conditions, if someone's going to be able to sign up for health insurance anytime, then there has to be some penalty to avoid them just signing up right before they are sick. And that's the entire problem. So if we don't want any mandate for being covered for health insurance, if we don't want to say that people can choose whether to be covered or not, then we need to have some penalty if they sign up at the last moment. And under the Senate bill, if you were covered, if you had health insurance, all your pre-existing conditions had to be covered. If you dropped your health insurance, then you had to wait 6 months before being covered, and you couldn't just sign up immediately. It would be as though you could sign up for home insurance when your house was on fire. No, of course you can't. You have to sign up way in advance and have your policy. You can't just sign up right before you have a problem. So that's the basic fundamental problem with the mandate and with covering existing conditions. It's fine to cover existing conditions, pre-existing conditions, all conditions, as long as you are continuously insured. You can't have a system where you don't sign up, then all of a sudden you sign up and you happen to have, say, lung cancer, and you say to the insurance company, this is a pre-existing condition, you have to cover my lung cancer, in which case the insurance company can say to you, well, why weren't you insured before? You should have got your insurance before.
Let me take a call from Marty in Evansville. Hi, Marty.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, hi, yeah. You know, we talk about Obamacare taking a death spiral. Well, that's part and parcel due to Republicans doing anything they can to make that die. Initially, this plan was set up with the hope that a lot of young people would sign up and that would offset the elderly folks, so to speak. Well, and if that didn't work, there was a money set aside in the event that that idea didn't pan out. And what is the first thing the Republicans do? They vaporize that fund. The Republicans are intentionally trying to make this fail as opposed to working things out and rewriting it or making it work for all of us.
Yeah, Diana.
Thank you.
No one is trying to make this intentionally fail. It is failing of its own accord because young people are smart. They're not going to sign up for a plan that costs $500 a month when their average health expenses are $500 a year. That's why they don't want to sign up. The plan is biased in favor of old people against young people, but young people are too smart to fall for it.
So couldn't there be, though, some fixes that could be done to sustain Obamacare without letting it collapse?
The system, I think, is inherently unstable for that reason. The only fixes that can be done would be to allow people to enroll in plans outside the Obamacare marketplace. And don't forget, only 9.5 million people are enrolled in the Affordable Care Act exchange plans right now. And we have about 350-some million people in the United States. The problem with the Affordable Care Act is that it makes plans overly expensive. Even if you are not signed up to one of the plans on the exchange, it tells insurance companies you can only offer plans that have all kinds of broad coverage, maternity care, even if you don't intend to have babies, mental health care, drug abuse, even if you have no problem with drugs. These insurance companies are mandated to have very, very large, expensive plans. People can sign up basically in enrollment periods even if they hadn't signed up before, so they can wait until they're sick and then sign up. That is very expensive also. That is why the system is out of control.
Yeah, we have just a minute before news break and more time to talk after that. Can you give us the basic foundation of the health care system you would like to see put in place?
I think it should be. We know how to put in place insurance plans. We should put them in place just like any other kind of insurance plans. People should have a choice of plans that they buy. People who cannot afford to sign up for health insurance should be given vouchers or refundable tax credits by the state or federal government in order to enable them to purchase health insurance off the national market so that you and I can purchase the same kind of health insurance as anybody who has a low income. There's studies showing that people on Medicaid have no better health outcomes than people who are uninsured. That's because Medicaid is a lower form of health care insurance, and we don't want that. We don't want a lower form for anybody.
Our guest is Diana Furchgott-Roth. She is with the Manhattan Institute. She is talking with us about what next for health care. President Trump says it is time to let Obamacare fail after three Senate Republicans have come out against a plan to repeal it. What happens now? We are talking with our first guest about what she would like to see Congress do now. Our second guest after 7:30 will make the case for single payer. And we wonder what you think. What do you think should happen now with our health care system? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Diana Furchgott-Roth, the Director of Economics 21 at the Manhattan Institute and a Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow. Today, President Trump is meeting with Senate GOP conference committee members for lunch at the White House, and apparently is going to be, I don't know, twisting arms about health care, or do you still have hope, Diana, that Congress will be able to do this repeal and replace?
Well, it's as Winston Churchill said he said something like, in the final analysis, the Americans always do the right thing. He said this about Americans coming into World War II. So yes, I have. I'm sure that in the last analysis, when the rubber hits the road, Congress is going to do the right thing. But it's just very sad that Senator McConnell has not been able to craft a compromise among his members so far. When they all the Republicans ran on repeal of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. McConnell announced last night on the Senate floor that despite at least at this time not having the votes, that there would be a procedural vote on a bill to repeal and replace in 2 years. So you have hope for that.
I don't know what's going to happen, but this bill should pass. We need to get rid of the mandates of the Affordable Care Act and put in place something that's more like other insurance systems. So when you want a life insurance policy, a home insurance policy, an auto insurance policy, there are many, many companies that are competing to provide this. You can drive along and you can hear a company advertise, call us for a 15-minute quote and we'll lower your rates. We don't have that for health insurance because it's not an active market. And the Affordable Care Act tells each insurance company exactly what they have to provide. It's more like a regulated utility, such as your water or your electricity bill. We need to turn it back to what insurance is for other kinds of products. We know how to do insurance. We also know how to look after low-income individuals, and we need to combine those two skills in order to have health insurance for Americans.
Let's go to Dwayne in Weston next. Hi, Dwayne.
Oh, good morning. I know your guest brought up catastrophic policies and comparing, to automobile insurance. And when you don't have a lot of money, you can buy a beater car, less expensive. But to a lot of people, everything is catastrophic. They can't dig themselves out of a $3,000 or $4,000 bill. From a hospital stay or just a broken leg or a wrist surgery. I just think the price is unreasonable. A lot of things your guest says is it's feasible, but if the prices were reasonable compared to what people make and what they have left after the end of the week when they pay all their bills, it's the only word I can come up with is it's unreasonable countries send other people or people to other countries to have surgeries, the insurance company will say, we'll fly you over to Switzerland or Germany to have this done, have it done there for $20,000 instead of $80,000 here. You know, it's just crazy that, you know, there's too many people in the middle from you having a procedure and the guy doing your stitches that are taking part of the money. There's just too many layers taking profit, and that's my comment.
All right. So healthcare costs are unreasonable in general, Duane says, and hey.
Yes, I absolutely agree. There isn't any competition. There isn't any transparency. Even if before you go to the hospital, they cannot tell you how much it's going to cost. If they were to tell you how much it would cost, you could shop around and go to different hospitals and say, how much would it cost to have this particular procedure? And by the way, I look on any hospitalization as something that is catastrophic. It's an unpredictable expense that should be covered by insurance. What I'm saying should not necessarily be covered are routine visits, such as a visit to a doctor for a cold or a well baby visit. Should not have to be covered by insurance. Of course, you should be able to buy a plan with an HMO, a health maintenance organization, that covers all these things if you want to, but you should also have the option of buying a plan that just has these unpredictable expenses. There's a very good book by Dr. John Goodman called Priceless, about how the price system has been taken out of our healthcare, so we cannot take these prices and compare them, and that's a lot more what we need to do. Say, if someone hit my car, I could go to three different gas stations or the dealer and say, how much would it cost to fix? And I could pick the least expensive one. But it's not possible to do that. You don't have that information in healthcare. Plus, you have malpractice insurance, which adds hundreds of thousands of dollars to an individual doctor's practice. So there's a lot of different things in there that drive healthcare costs up.
Yeah. Well, so what do we do, though, to make sure that it's not just the wealthy that have health care insurance policies that they can afford, and that, you know, the sick don't get sicker?
Well, that's a great question, Joy. And when we have people who don't have food, we give them food stamps, and we say you can go to any grocery store you like and use these food stamps to buy food. We don't send packages of food to their front door because we don't know who wants Cheerios and who wants Raisin Bran. It's the same with health insurance. We should give them a refundable tax credit, and that was in the Republican Senate and House bills, and say that you can go and choose your own health insurance, because not every health insurance policy is going to be appropriate for every individual. People should be able to choose their own health insurance policies. Health insurance companies should be able to compete to offer what they think people want to buy. Right now, neither of those is allowed. Insurance companies have to offer what the Affordable Care Act tells them to offer. This is a very generous product with free well visits with drug abuse, mental health coverage, maternity leave. I have to buy a plan with pediatric dental care, even though my children are all grown up and I don't need pediatric dental care for any of my children. Shouldn't have to be that way.
So Democrats have been ramping up calls for a single-payer system. How does that idea sit with you?
It doesn't work in the countries that it's been tried. If you look at Canada, there is very long waiting lists for something like a hip replacement or for other kinds of things. Canadians, when they want to cut the line, they come down to the United States. Britain, the country that I am from, has single-payer in terms of the National Health Service, but they have an outlet in that doctors are allowed to practice privately, and then you can cut the line by paying. So that works because there's a kind of off-ramp. The same with France. There's single-payer, but then you can pay on the side to get the doctor that you want. So the only successful single-payer plans are ones that allow people to go into the market and purchase on their own. But that's not fair to low-income people. They don't get the same health care as others. And the single-payer plan is always overwhelmed. There's always long waits for visits. It works because it's rationed. Americans don't want rationing. They're not happy with Medicaid, which is a form of single payer, because doctors don't want to take the appointments. So I would say single payer does not work in the United States. It would not work because Americans are used to a higher standard. They wouldn't put up with calling their doctor and the doctor saying, yes, well, I can see you in 6 weeks.
So we have 30 seconds. How hopeful are you that Republicans, perhaps with Democratic support, will be able to come up with some kind of health care plan that works?
I'm very hopeful that eventually the United States will get a health plan that works for everybody. And I have no political prognostications as to how that's going to happen, which combination of Republicans or Democrats or how it's going to happen, but I'm sure it's going to work out in the end.
Thank you very much for being with us on very short notice, by the way. Thanks a lot.
Great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Diana Furchgott-Roth is the Director of Economics 21 at the Manhattan Institute and a Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow. Now we will get another perspective, and we will continue taking your calls and your thoughts. What do you want to see happen next when it comes to health care in the United States? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let me welcome our next guest. Dr. Susan Rogers is a recently retired volunteer attending hospitalist and internist at the John H. Stroger Jr. Hospital of Cook County, Illinois. She is also an assistant professor of medicine at Rush University and a board member of the group Physicians for a National Health Program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today.
Well, thanks very much for being with us. First, generally, after Senate Republicans failed to pass a health care bill this week and calls to repeal and replace later, also, at least at this point, don't look to have the votes. What's your assessment of why Congress, Republicans in particular, can't come up with a plan?
Well, I can't explain why Republicans do anything that they do, but I will say that the health plan that was proposed was not really a health plan. All it did was it just decimated Medicaid, which provided millions of people with coverage that they did not have before the Affordable Care Act. And then it gave the tax breaks to the extremely wealthy part of the country. So it really did nothing to improve health care at all for people. It did not improve coverage. It did not provide more insurance at less cost. All it did was take away the provisions to continue the Medicaid expansion, which under the Affordable Care Act really did help provide care for a lot of people.
Yeah, so what do you make of President Trump saying, well, now it's time to let Obamacare fail?
Well, from what I can see, President Trump really did not understand the bill. I mean, everything that he said, when he was campaigning was not in the bill. And letting the Affordable Care Act fail is just cruel. I mean, it's just saying, well, after enough people die from this, then we'll have to do something. I mean, that's not the way to govern. It's not the way to take care of people. It's not the way to provide health care in this country. And clearly, there are some issues that need to be addressed in the Affordable Care Act, but letting it fail without doing anything is just totally inappropriate and, I think, unconscionable.
Yeah. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says it's time for lawmakers on both sides of the aisle to work together. Let's take a listen.
We Democrats believe that the time has finally come for our Republican colleagues to take us up on our offer of working together to improve the health care system rather than sabotage it.
So how do you feel about Chuck Schumer's call for Republicans and Democrats to work together?
Well, I understand why he would say that, and in an ideal world, that may that makes sense. But if you look at the history of the Obama administration of Republicans and Democrats, the Republicans have never wanted to work with the Democrats. The whole Affordable Care Act, they just all 100% vetoed. They, did nothing to help that except provide some amendments that that benefited their donors. So I'm very apprehensive about trying to, you know, thinking that they can work together. And that's why I am supporting single payer, because I think that that's really the only solution to the healthcare mess that we are in right now.
Yeah. What's your response to our guest from the Manhattan Institute? Just before you came on, I think you might have heard her. She said that single payer doesn't work in the countries where it's instituted, that there are long wait lists, and unless you cut in line, your coverage isn't adequate. So long waiting lists, and it doesn't work in other countries. What's your response to that?
That is not true. The data does not support statements like that. There are some wait lists for things that are not urgent. But there's no question that when you present in any single-payer country with an emergency, you do not wait. You get a cardiac cath when you present with chest pain, just like you would do here. So the long wait lists are a misnomer. And one of the things we have to remember here is that we have people here who wait forever. So if you're talking about long wait lists, we have people who never get care. And this whole idea that single-payer rations care, that's exactly what we're doing here. We ration care based on your ability to pay. And to me, that is totally unfair. And single-payer eliminates that, because every patient presents the same in the sense that the provider will get paid the same amount of money. And that's part of the reason why Medicaid does not function well in this country, because it has been totally underfunded, and so many providers do not want to take Medicaid patients because their reimbursement is so low.
Yeah.
There's another fallacy, too, that Canadians continue to come to this country for care. And again, there is no data to support that either. There may be a fair number of Canadians who come to winter in the United States, and those Canadians who tend to be a little bit older and retired may use care in this country during that time, but they don't come here. Just specifically for care that they cannot get in Canada, that the data does not support that.
Our previous guest also would like to see a federal Medicaid floor at the poverty level for all 50 states, and everyone above that who does not is not insured through their employer would get a tax credit to buy their own policy. We have just a minute before news. What's your general reaction to that approach?
Well, you know, tax credits do nothing to address the cost of things. All they do is it's just a permutation of how it gets paid. And for you to benefit from a tax credit, you're already at a level of income where you can afford some things. But most people cannot benefit from a tax credit because they don't have the money up front to pay for that. It's like health savings account. If you can put $6,000 in a health savings account, then you can afford the premium. Most people aren't there. So that's not a good way to provide care. Just figuring out or playing with who pays for what does nothing to address the underlying cost.
Our guest is Dr. Susan Rogers. She is a board member of the group Physicians for a National Health Program, and we are talking with her about why she supports single payer and what she would like to see happen in the United States now that yet another attempt to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act has failed. And we welcome your questions and thoughts, too. What do you want to see happen next? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about what is next for healthcare policy in the United States now that the healthcare bill has collapsed in the U.S. Senate and doesn't look like they have the votes, at least not right now, to repeal and replace even with a 2-year delay. So what should happen now? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. In our first half hour, we talked with a guest from the Manhattan Institute. In this half hour, we are talking with a guest from the Physicians for a National Health Program, Dr. Susan Rogers. And we have lots of calls. Let's go to the phones. Troy in Muskego is with us. Hi, Troy.
Hello. I just wanted to say that speaking with business owners, being a part business owner myself, it's really interesting. I think that one of the biggest, I think the majority of people want single payers explained to them. They, even business owners, kind of change their tune a little bit and go for it, because I think Republicans have painted this picture that it's, especially even with the ACA, that it's all a form of welfare, and that it's, you know, and I think once people realize that single payer or the ACA, these are things that that are so much more beneficial. I noticed that the last call you had, and it's an interesting point, is that most people who are really against the ACA right now or want to see it fail are, a lot of those young people, but they're complaining that they're paying a premium of $500 or more. Those are people that are making about $500,000 a year and more. And a lot of these people that are complaining about the ACA are really very wealthy business owners that don't want to pay, you know, their premiums because they're so high. And that's really where you have a lot of the opposition, and they're trying to paint single payer or all the or the ACA as being a form of welfare. And and I think that
Troy, and I'm just curious. I don't mean to press you, but are you calling the Affordable Care Act a single payer health care system?
No, it's a step towards a single payer system. Mm-hmm. But I think people that what I'm saying is that Republicans have painted the ACA as being a form of welfare. There is a lot of people that are against the ACA that don't even realize what it, you know, what its function, how it works, and how it benefits them. It's just that they're against it automatically because the Republicans painted it out to be a form of welfare.
I get you. Yeah. All right. So, what's your reaction to that, Dr. Rogers?
Well, the expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, some people could interpret as a welfare program because it is an entitlement program. But when we think about who is covered by Medicaid, most of the people who are covered in Medicaid are children who are in poverty, which is a large majority of children in this country. It's people who are disabled. It's people who are elderly. Most of the many people who are older who are in nursing homes are paid for under Medicaid. But the other thing that the Affordable Care Act did was it provided the ability for people to buy health insurance. And that's the whole problem, the underlying foundation of the Affordable Care Act, is that it's based in the insurance industry, which by definition is a multi-payer system. That is, you've got multiple payers, you've got hundreds of different plans, and even if you look at Blue Cross in a single state, there's hundreds of plans under Blue Cross. So it just increases the complexity of having to pay for this. A single payer system is you have a single payer, and in this sense it would be the government, but it's a privately provided service. That is, a doctor in their own office, a private hospital, they provide the service, but they get reimbursed from the government, and it's a much more simple system to follow. Everybody has the same benefits. You don't have all these complexities of I don't know if this is covered, I don't know if that is covered. And it wouldn't be an entitlement program. It would be, you know, we'd pay into it with taxes, but then we wouldn't pay any more. Right now, the only people who can, you know, pay for these copays and all these high deductibles are people who have money, and they often end up buying an insurance plan that they're not even able to use.
You know, before the Affordable Care Act became the Affordable Care Act, there was the public option was on the table, and it was taken off because so many feared that was a big step in the direction of a single payer. If we can't even get a public option, can we get Medicare for all?
Well, the problem with the public option and the Affordable Care Act was that would end up being the pool of people who couldn't get insurance anywhere else. And that kind of program will not work because then you have everybody who needs health care in one pool. The way a single payer works is everybody is in the pool. So you've got people who have a lot of health care needs and then people who have minimal, if any, health care needs. And then the cost is distributed across everybody so that it's able to work. You can't have an insurance pool that is high needs and then have affordable premiums. It just doesn't work. And so that's why single payer would work. You've got everybody in the pool. Medicare is high cost because you end up having a lot of older people with health care needs in that pool. But if you also had young people in that pool, the cost per person would markedly go down.
John in Minneapolis is with us now. Hi, John. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Yes, I just want to say, you know, like the national health care, like they got over in England, there's a baby over there that needs treatment, and they don't want to spend any money on them. And I just think, and they want to bring them over to the U.S. And I think the system over there, they want to bring him over here so he can get his treatment. But
let me just jump in. So I think that's that little boy is there's a big debate over he's considered terminal, and doctors say nothing can really help him, but they won't cover it in England apparently. But now there's, you know, should he be brought over to the U.S. is up in the air. So Dr. Rogers, is this an example of rationing or why single payer wouldn't be good?
Well, I don't think that the decision made with that little boy, because it's very complicated, because apparently the family has raised money and they are willing to pay for his care here, and the government is denying that, and I'm not quite clear why. But we have to be clear and understand that right now there's people who can't get their blood pressure treated. They can't get their diabetes treated. There's basic health care needs of people in this country that are not met because they do not have access to care. They are not covered. And so we are already rationing care, and we're not rationing care for high-cost super tech care. We're rationing basic care. People aren't getting basic care in this country. A single-payer system would allow everyone to have that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people would say that's good. Everybody should be able to get basic care, but I also don't want the healthcare system to deny me a treatment that might save my life.
Well, it shouldn't, and right now we're doing that already. There's people who their insurance company will deny transplants. Right now, insurance companies are making decisions of what they will provide for you based on money, period. It's all about money. And that's why buying a healthcare plan, the competition that, you know, people talk about, well, you need to buy a healthcare plan that suits you, makes no sense. It's like, I mean, we don't know what our health care needs are going to be next week. We don't know what our health care needs are going to be in 5 years. So you want to be covered. The whole point of insurance is to prevent you from being financially destroyed because of health care costs, and helping you keep healthy. And there's no way that you can predict your health care costs. It's just like you wouldn't buy car insurance that only covers the right side of your car. You don't know what's going to happen with your car. Hopefully you don't need to ever file a claim with your car insurance. But if you do, you want everything covered. And that's what a single payer would do. Everybody has the same benefit. There is no rationing. And right now we have the gold standard of rationing. If you can afford it, you can get it. If you can't, you won't get it. And that's why 30,000 people a year are dying in this country because of no insurance. Yes. And if that's not rationing, I don't know what is.
So with the failure of the Republicans in Congress to repeal and replace Obamacare, and with the president and some others saying, hey, let the Affordable Care Act collapse and die on its own. Do you think that this is the time for Medicare for All?
I really do. I think this is a great window of opportunity, because the problem with the basis of health care in this country being the foundation being health insurance companies is not working. Why is it that we are the only industrialized country in the world that allows the market to determine what our health care, what we can provide with health care? We are the only one, and market forces in this country are providing care where it can be paid for, not where it's needed. And that's And single payer will provide health care everywhere it's needed, not based on what you can afford. So this is a great opportunity, because right now there's no way to be able to pay for everybody to be covered if you have a, if the foundation of your health care system is private insurance that is out there to make money.
Yeah, and I know you're not a political scientist, but Republicans are still in control of Congress and the presidency, for that matter. Do you see this changing in future elections over this issue?
Well, you know, it should be that who's ever in control shouldn't matter, because what should matter is people, whoever is in Congress should care about the people in this country, and they're clearly not. They're caring about who has paid into their campaign coffers. And they are more beholden to their donors than to their constituents. And I think that's clearly why there have been all these town meetings, this large outcry, a lot of grassroots activity, because they're not responding to what's good for the country. And that shouldn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. Your ideology may be a little bit different. But neither party should think people should die because they don't have insurance.
Thank you very much for being with us. Dr. Susan Rogers, recently retired, volunteer attending hospitalist and internist at the John H. Stoger Jr. Hospital of Cook County, Illinois. Also a board member of the group Physicians for a National Health Program, talking with us about her hopes for Medicare for All or single-payer health care in light of the health care debate going on in Washington. In our first half hour, we heard from a guest from the Manhattan Institute who had a different plan. I'm Joy Cardine. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Brianne Chasso for producing this program. This is the Ideas Network.